good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good whatever it is, wherever you are today. My name is Ali Amagasu, and you're listening to the latest episode of Cloud Unfiltered. Today, as always, I'm joined by my spectacularly entertaining co-host, Pete Johnson. Hey, Pete.
Hey, Ali, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much. I'm so excited to have today's guests on because they have been elusive. I'll say we try to start scheduling them back in February. It's June. This might not even go live till July, but it's June and we're finally talking to them. So yay for that. Let me introduce them. I've got Chris Anizek, the CTO from CNCF. He is currently in a lounge in an airport in between flights on his way to China, if I understand correctly. Welcome, Chris.
It's good. It's good to be here. I'll try to be as quiet as possible in the lounge.
It's okay. We're not hearing a thing.
Yeah.
Our other guest is Philip Estes from IBM. And Phil, I do not have your title.
Yes, I'm a distinguished engineer and CTO in the IBM Cloud Office for Architecture Strategy around containers and Linux.
And clearly involved enough in CNCF that when we set this call up, someone thought to say, hey, we should involve Phil as well. So that'll be interesting to find out what your angle is there. But I'll say when we originally asked you guys to be on, it's because Containerd was graduating. And that was exciting. We'd gotten the press release. We wanted to talk about it.
Yep.
So many things have happened since then. So, Chris, I'm going to start by putting before we do a dive down into any of the technologies, I want to give you a chance to just talk to us about what has happened lately with CNCF.
Yeah, it's been a little bit wild since, you know, when we initially set this up, we were kind of all preparing for KubeCon Europe in Barcelona, which we nearly had about 8,000 people show up in May. You know, we've had a lot of announcements there, mostly in terms of the ecosystems continuing to grow. You know, we have over 400 members now, part of CNCF, different companies all over the world. We had a end user award was given to Intuit. If you're familiar with like the TurboTax folks, they've been a long-term adopter of cloud native and kind of moving to a cloud native architecture. It's always interesting to kind of see companies that have been around for a while that were, you know, running mainframes, making their journey to the cloud and cloud native techniques. We also announced, I believe at the time, there was a FluentD graduation, which is another project part of CNCF. So just like Containerd, we have projects that eventually reach a certain maturity level and acceptance from our technical board and CNCF, where they decide to bestow upon the kind of graduated title, showing that the project is, you know, diverse, has a lot of different companies involved to ensure that it's going to have a long life. It's good for sustainability when you just have more than one company involved in the project. And it's a project that's kind of adopted widely and generally, you know, ready for companies to kind of bet their business on, essentially. So they're kind of the big announcements. We also had the kind of interesting open tracing, open census merger under a new project called Open Telemetry. So if you're kind of familiar with the APM space, there's kind of different ways to, it's kind of different approaches out there for tracing APIs. There's a lot of different tools out there. They all have different, you know, APIs. And so this is kind of a merger of two strong opinionated open source projects under the banner of one. So, and that basically all rolls under CNCF now. So it's kind of exciting to see that when you have two competing projects that may not get along super well, but eventually come to some conclusion that, you know what, it's better to work together, stronger together. Let's do something and announce it at KubeCon.
Wow, you guys have been busy.
Yeah. So,
in a nod to what we were originally going to speak about, can you tell me, or can you tell our audience what Containerd is and also what FluentD is?
So FluentD is, I'll leave Containerd mostly to Phil here. But so FluentD is a unified, they call it a unified logging layer. And so basically you kind of think as FluentD as a way to aggregate a bunch of logs from many different sources, right? It could be, you know, syslog, it could be logs coming from an application, and then basically taking that and putting it somewhere else. So almost like a proxy where you could take, you know, maybe, you know, syslogs, you know, from a bunch of machines and dump them in some type of RDMS. And so FluentD has basically built this ecosystem of, they have literally adapters written for every type of data store, logging source, and so on, right? And they have hundreds of these plugins, and it's used all over the place, right? So they've got this great ecosystem that they've built. And, you know, logs are almost a part of any application, not necessarily cloud native, but in the cloud native world, you're tending to deal with microservices that may be using different systems, logging different types, and Fluentd kind of helps aggregate all those and then put them in, you know, your preferred store or whatnot. So hopefully that makes a little bit sense to you, but kind of think of it as a unified logger aggregator.
Super useful. Absolutely. And would most people listening to this talk have heard of Fluentd, or are they likely to have actually used it?
I would see they probably may have come across it, you know, once or twice, in their kind of development life. A lot of times it is used kind of behind the scenes. A lot of the, let's say, like, you know, I think Google Cloud and some of the clouds out there may use Fluentd behind the scenes as part of their platform. So it's kind of something that, you know, kind of flies kind of under the radar, but used quite heavily. And, you know, honestly, developers always have a problem of aggregating logs from different sources and dumping it somewhere if they roll applications on their own.
All right. Thank you for explaining that. I appreciate it. So Phil, how about Containerd? Can you let our audience know what that is?
Sure. So it's probably best to give a minute of history, but the Docker engine has been used for years by the Kubernetes project as the runtime for how containers are actually run underneath Kubernetes. Docker is seen as sort of an opinionated runtime, and there have been some historic struggles between version upgrades and Kubernetes changes. And so over the years, the community and Docker and Google and others worked together on a strategy to have a less opinionated runtime donated to the CNCF. And so Containerd is one option for a container runtime to replace Docker underneath Kubernetes. Fast forward to where we are today, and you have IBM Cloud and Google Cloud both using Containerd in production. Red Hat has also entered that space as well with OpenShift. They have Creo, which is also now a CNCF project. So Kubernetes abstracted how you connect a container runtime to Kubernetes, and that allows for a plurality of engines. So Docker is still available, Containerd is available, Creo is available. And so that's kind of where we are today. It's a basic core container runtime that Kubernetes can use underneath the platform.
And are you all using that extensively at IBM? Is that where your involvement is? Or are you just a contributing member of the community and?
Both, yeah. So I was heavily involved in the Docker engine on behalf of IBM, became a maintainer, worked on some of our partnership with Docker over the years, and then helped with this idea of creating Containerd and contributing it to the CNCF. And I'm a core maintainer of Containerd as well. And we do use it heavily in IBM Cloud. Our functions as a service platform runs on it. Our IBM Kubernetes service runs on Containerd. So yeah, I'm definitely involved both upstream and open source and also with how we're using it at IBM.
You all have touched on many subjects that I know Pete is passionate about. So
please. Yeah, well, I was saying, so Phil, I think you and I are old enough to have this common frame of reference. What's going on with Containerd very much reminds me of Apache emerging out of the IIS Netscape application server wars back in like the mid 90s, where it was like, hey, maybe we should have an open source alternative to all these commercial solutions that we're having in this area. Is that an apt analogy, or is this different in a fundamental way that I'm not catching quite yet?
Yeah, I mean, maybe not as sharp a differentiation because, you know, Docker is also open source, but has been seen by some as being, you know, more tied to Docker's enterprise products. And so Containerd was a nice, agreement to have something kind of at a middle layer that isn't owned by Docker, the company. But Docker still uses Containerd underneath its broader kind of engine, both commercial and open source. There are similarities, the whole container runtime space has been interesting. Chris is well aware of that over the last 5 years.
Yeah, there's been, I mean, there's some other interesting history we didn't get into where, you know, when people say Docker, it could be a little bit confusing because, like, are you talking Docker the company, Docker the product, Docker the container? Yeah. A lot of people, usually when they say Docker, they mean containers. But what a lot of people don't realize, you know, the past a little over four years, there's been efforts to kind of standardize what a container is, right? So you necessarily don't have to rely just on using Docker containers, right? There was kind of this fun phase that we affectionately called the container wars back in the day when you had like Rocket, container, different runtimes, and there was an effort actually parallel to CNCF setup called the Open Container Initiative, which, you know, I was also involved in when I helped start CNCF. And OCI was basically scoped to basically standardize what a container runtime and image is, so you could have, you know, different options essentially, not be tied necessarily to one vendor. And that project has actually been incredibly wildly successful in stopping kind of the kind of fighting and infighting kind of in the container space. And now most containers out there, whether they're Docker or custom, are all based on OCI. And it's kind of just this quiet little standard that exists that is supported by projects like Containerd, Docker, and others out there.
Nice. I have two other kind of more broad technical things I want to ask, but before I do this, I have to give you guys in your marketing of CNCF a shout out here. Now we don't post video anymore, but Chris, I don't know if you can see what this is I'm holding up in front of me. I'm the proud owner of a cloud native computing foundation fidget spinner.
Yeah,
which is it's hard to have obtained one of these because there was this intersection of Kubernetes growth and fidget spinner popularity. And there's like this, you know, this supply demand where I have this. And I don't know if you can hear this.
Yeah, it's a solid piece of hardware.
It's a solid piece of metal and it's got some high quality ball bearings in there. This thing will spin like crazy. And I'm a fidgeter. I play with this literally every day on every meeting that I'm on. So I think about you guys all the time. I'm just saying.
It's great. Then that investment was worth it. We actually, for listeners, if they're interested in their own fidget spinner, we actually do have them on.
You still have them.
Yeah, CNCF has a community store. If you go to store.cncf.io, you should be able to find them there, along with like shirts, socks. You know, if you need some Kubernetes socks, that's always good to keep your feet warm.
I remain a big fan of the fidget spinner. I got it for free at a booth at a trade show, and
PC worked for CNCF marketing. That was a very organic.
You and I have done enough time in booths at trade shows to know good swag when you see it.
And I also know that there was some poor marketing person who's like, let's do this. And everybody's like, and that person fought for the budget and they got it. So if you're listening right now, marketing warrior, kudos to you.
If you haven't seen one, it looks like the Kubernetes logo, right? With the ship wheel. Like this was a custom build. This was not a cheap product.
No.
To go out and put some swag on. I can't tell you how many pens of different companies I've worked for I still own. Like that's the lowest common denominator of conference swag. This is a high quality product that
a bit of a funny story. We prototype like a much larger version of that for an award because we do like community awards,
right.
And it just like turned out to be ridiculously heavy and just impractical. So we're just like, all right, we're not going to do like large size fidget spinners for community awards. It's just too much.
Right. Good news is you won an award. Bad news is it'll cost you another $200 because it weighs more than 50 pounds to check as you're on your trip.
Exactly.
Home. Right. Okay. So sorry for that aside, but I had to give your marketing people a shout out.
Appreciate it.
Okay. So the first of the two things I wanted to ask the two of you about is this mini VM movement that seems to be going on, not just in CNCF, but in this broader community. I mean, I want to say it was as far back as last summer, we had someone on the program who was with the Kata Containers group. You know, since we've seen AWS announce Firecracker, and although that's still kind of in beta, that's the same kind of thing. And they have not announced this, but they could offer that on Outposts. So that there's this potential for this idea of this mini VM as a housing to run one container per VM, where if you're not familiar with mini VMs, for listeners, the idea is that you get the spin-up speed of a container, but you get the resource separation and the security of a VM. So where do the two of you see this movement going, and at what stage is it in? Are we kind of at you know, we at crawl, you know, crawl, walk, run? I assume we're still at crawl with this, but what's your take on this movement?
Yeah, so it's definitely a very interesting space, and there's lots of interest. In fact, I would even expand it beyond simply micro VMs to other isolation, higher levels of isolation as...
Yeah, that's a good way to abstract the conversation, definitely.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, gVisor from Google, Nabla containers from IBM Research. There's this whole suite of options out there for those that say, hey, I run a lot of untrusted workloads, and I don't know if I believe the Linux kernel's isolation is viable for the concerns I have or the concerns of my CISO or security team. So it's definitely a very active space. I would call it quite young. Of course, you know, those of us in the thick of it, you know, we've been hearing about this for a couple of years and assume everyone's heard of it, but, you know, that's the bubble we live in. So I would assume it's still, you know, maybe far down the roadmap from you know, serious production use. But, you know, for example, IBM is definitely looking at the technologies you mentioned, Firecracker, Kata. We, like I mentioned, we have Nabla, thinking about how to offer our own customers in public cloud higher levels of isolation. The nice thing is all the projects we just talked about have integrations with Containerd. So that means Kubernetes can use these technologies today. In fact, at KubeCon Barcelona, I demoed all of those projects in a single talk, which was a little bit exciting. To get all that set up and working. But just to show
you had a busy week before then.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, very interesting technologies, a lot of interest. And like I said, the nice thing is having an integration with a container runtime, and Kubernetes has support for specifying the runtime class now. So I could start a pod and say, you know what, I don't trust the container image in this pod, so please use the Kata runtime or the Firecracker runtime in the same Kubernetes cluster. Fancy. As non-isolated.
So mixed clusters, you mean, right? That where not necessarily every node in the cluster has the same. That's interesting.
Yeah. So anyway, there's a lot of work going on to basically put the plumbing down for these technologies to become adopted and to be used fairly easily from the Kubernetes abstraction layer. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see where all that goes.
Yeah, I think.
Well, that's cool. I'm sorry, Chris, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I totally share the same sentiments of Phil, kind of where we are with things. I think there's a lot of kind of somewhat FUD out there in terms of like, you must use, you know, VMs or micro VMs because they're inherently more secure than containers. But, you know, that to me is a completely orthogonal concept, right? Like it's kind of like saying Linux is inherently, you know, not secure. It's really how you configure, you know, your environment and set it up, right? Not necessarily the technology. You know, I don't know if Phil has sentiments here because, you know, you operate in container land almost 24/7, but this comes up all the time, at least from, it's like, oh, it's like, we're not going to move to, you know, containers, you know, because they're not secure. And I'm like, it's like saying you're not going to use Linux because it's not secure. It's really how you configure it.
Yeah. So, you know, I think the isolation discussion, as Chris mentioned, is, you know, interesting in the sense that there's a lot of FUD around, are containers secure enough or not? But, and some of that's just educational, you know, getting security teams up to date on what all this means. I was talking to an enterprise customer lately who said our security team, I feel like they live 20 years behind where we are, you know, on the tech side. And so, there's that side of the discussion. But definitely when we're talking about, you know, multi-tenancy and mixed clusters, there's definitely a lot of interest in getting to choose the isolation level for very specific needs. And so I think that's where a lot of the interest lies for where we're going with that.
I love this idea of these mixed clusters, though, of being able to select it on an image by image basis, because then you can let the market decide, right? I like it when when organizations can set up situations where you can let the market decide instead of making a decision that you then have to defend for the next 5 years or whatever. So this concept of the mixed thing is really awesome. I love that idea. Well, the other related one I wanted to ask the two of you about was the function as a service on Kubernetes movement. So IBM and OpenWhisk has done a lot of work on this. I've talked to Michael, and I never know how to pronounce Michael's last name, Berendt, I think is how you, and Carlos Santana and that whole team. I've talked to those guys a lot. You know, Google announced Knative last summer and kind of hasn't really decided whether they want that to be the underpinning for a bunch of different function as a service on Kubernetes or whether they want it to be its own standalone thing. So there's a lot of movement in this area as well. And it's related to that first topic because Amazon basically revealed to us that, hey, we haven't been using containers underneath Lambda all this time. It's really been Firecracker. So how do, you know, given what we were just talking about with the mini VM movement, and its adjacency at least to this function as a service on Kubernetes movement. Again, same question, you know, where do you think that movement is and where do you think that's going?
Yeah, so as interesting, you mentioned Michael. Michael Berendt and I talk regularly. In fact, he just sent an email today asking some more questions about Kata and Firecracker and gVisor. So again, as you said, there's an intersection between these technologies and how serverless platforms will deal with kind of public isolation. But to your point, you know, OpenWhisk has replatformed on Kubernetes, which is an interesting move, which allows us to run our IBM Cloud Functions platform on our Kubernetes platform. And so Knative is another step in that, although Knative is more the idea, let's not build a functions as a service platform, let's use the pieces of Kubernetes, the things that already exist, pods, and we can use Istio for routing and in cluster build to build. So Knative is kind of a truly fully Kubernetes native idea around serverless and FAS. So yeah, I think a lot of people are trying to figure out what that means. And we've listed two out of, I don't know, 10 different functions as a service projects around containers and open source and Kubernetes. So yeah.
Yeah, we and CNCF, we have a serverless working group that's kind of exploring and documenting a lot of this stuff in this space. We actually, if you go to the CNCF landscape, l.cncf.io or s.cncf.io, which is kind of a smaller version, it kind of shows you the different projects out there kind of categorized in serverless / functions of the service land. It's kind of still an evolving you know, space. We're doing some work in CNCF to kind of catalog things. We're also, we also have a project called Cloud Events, which is kind of trying to standardize the metadata around a event that a function would receive, which, right, you know, so
the triggering events.
Yeah, like simplify the tooling so you could process events from all these different systems because the metadata is consistent, which is, to me, is a great idea. And there's a lot of work in getting Cloud Events supported by, you know, the different clouds and vendors out there. So it's still a space that's evolving, in my opinion.
Well, yeah, and that's another place. So I did some research with some buddies in the fall on this, building the equivalent of the Kubernetes guestbook on 5 different function as a service on top of Kubernetes runtimes to see how does the developer experience differ from one to the other. And at one extreme, you have things like Knative or OpenFAS, which very much expose to you things like the Docker files and an image repository and those kinds of things. And at the other end of the spectrum, you've got OpenWhisk that gives you a very Lambda-like experience. So this is another one where, like, the community has to vote kind of on which of these experiences do you want, where one, you have more control because you have access to some of the underlying container primitives, and in the other, you're trusting the abstraction to make some of those choices for you. And then the thing that kind of, to me, looms in the background, you know, based on what got announced in December is, I mean, they're not saying it yet, but it doesn't take a big leap of faith for you to see that 12 months from now, you could run Lambda on an Outpost. So why do I need function as a service on Kubernetes if I can get native Lambda in my own data center? So that's, I think there's kind of this race going on of the Kubernetes community trying to figure out what do they want FaaS on Kubernetes to look like? And will the community figure that out before, you know, the boogeyman comes and can turn on whatever they want in the data center? How far off do you think I am on thinking about it like that? Or do you think I'm giving Amazon way too much credit and some of the latency issues that they're going to have with Outlook are going to be bigger than people think?
Yeah, I don't have strong sort of feelings about the prediction necessarily, but I mean, Lambda's been around for a long time already, so there's the whole idea of who's UX has kind of become the accepted way to do serverless.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, so I think that's more of the issue is as you said, the experience of coming up to all these different projects can vary pretty wildly. And so I think almost the first decision is, do we want to offer functions in the way that people expect it from Lambda, or are we going to, you know, go with this Kubernetes native model where you kind of have to understand the moving parts of Kubernetes to interact with it?
Or is there some third mechanism that somebody hasn't created yet that, you know, we shouldn't assume that Amazon got it right the first time, right? I mean, maybe there's some other form factor that nobody's come up with yet.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And obviously you want a system that is not inherently tied to one cloud provider, in my opinion, right? You want your events in a way that they're, you know, if you drop something in like an S3 bucket, you know, it would be nice if that was somehow maybe like a genericized event, because almost each cloud provider has its own variation of that. So it's, we'll see where things go. I think there's a lot of innovation going on in kind of the serverless space, and we'll kind of see where it goes. You know, for a while I thought serverless was going to take off like this crazy like rocket ship, and you know, I was almost briefly paranoid for a little bit. But I think the practicality of this, it's not suitable for all types of workloads.
And, it is not.
You know, and just like, you know, just like infrastructure, you know, these days is like not every company is running like everything on containers. Like it's a mixed set of workloads running, you know, maybe there's some mainframe stuff there, there's some containers, maybe some old job. Like it's a mix of everything, right? Like infrastructure, you know, is won't ever be like run one way, in my opinion, just the reality of it. So it'll be a mix of everything.
Yeah, there's still lots of choice out there, and you have to make the choice that's best for your organization and your specific application. And yeah, I mean, if you want to run serverless workloads and things that have like, you know, high dependency on state, and you have to load that state every time you load the function, or if you need GPUs for something, or I mean, there's lots of use cases where serverless isn't appropriate. And I completely agree with you, Chris. There's such a mix. We're never going to standardize on one thing.
Yeah, it seems like there's always a movement for getting infrastructure to be like homogenous or just like one way of doing things. That's just never the never the reality. It's like infrastructure is heterogeneous. There's different ways to do something, and we try to do our best to kind of integrate them and stitch them together.
Well, I think an analogy that I use there is software development is. Depending upon your definition, somewhere between 50 and 70 years old. Structural engineering is several thousand years old, right? I mean, you can go to places in Europe and see archways that were built by Romans that use the exact same principles that we use to build things like the Golden Gate Bridge today. There's no one way to build a building, just like there's no, and if there's no one way to build the building, if they haven't gotten that in thousands of years, why do we think, you know, with compute infrastructure and software that we're going to figure it out in 70?
Good point, Pete.
Yeah, I'm done with my deep dive stuff. Why don't you, I think you were going to ask some more questions about some other either recent or upcoming kinds of announcements that CNCF was going to talk about.
Yeah, I realize we're running out of time with Chris hanging out in an airport lounge.
Yeah, no worries.
I really wanted to, before we wrap, just ask you, what's coming at KubeCon China?
Yeah, I can't reveal, obviously, the secret announcements coming
up. Doggone it.
But, you know, we're happy to host close to 4,000 people in Shanghai next week, which makes it kind of one of the largest open source conferences in China, which we're super excited about. You know, it's one of the things we do to kind of, you know, unify, you know, communities around the world. You know, open source is inherently a global thing, and, you know, we think it's important to have an event in Shanghai where I think China represents, there are number three contributor, I think, across the board to CNCF projects.
Wow, that was going to be my next question, and I am shocked by that number.
As a country, and I think they make up about 15 to 20% of our membership also, and we actually have a couple of open source projects in CNCF that were quote-unquote born in China. So like, if you look at a project called Harbor, which is kind of, they call it a cloud native registry, or it's a container registry, it supports hosting containers, Helm charts. It was born out of VMware China, which is kind of cool. And TIKV is kind of a fancy key value store that you could build some interesting, you know, technology on top of, and that was based out of China too. So it's kind of fun to see where, you know, it's interesting where we've been so open source, I think traditionally has been kind of heavy North American based. And, you know, as other countries grow and continue to do things at scale, they come up with interesting technologies. And I'm happy to have CNCF kind of at the center of that and host projects from different parts of the world. So yeah, I don't know if that answers your question.
So these guys have a strong stake in CNCF, it sounds like. Correct. And this isn't just a courtesy trip. It's not just a rerun of what was happening in Barcelona. This is
not at all. It's a whole separate, almost different community that they're open sourcing their ideas, sharing their approaches, and contributing upstream to the Kubernetes and CNCF project community. For example, you know, one example is there's a company out there called Ant Financial. I don't know if you're familiar with them, but there's a there's a service there called Alipay. It is the largest mobile payment system in the world. I think they have 800, 900 million users. It's just, you know, crazy, amount of transactions per second, all powered by Kubernetes. You know, they'll be sharing kind of their story of what they're doing and open sourcing some things. And they're another kind of CNCF end user member, which is awesome. So,
yeah, no, I'll just toss in a couple of our Containerd maintainers are from Alibaba Cloud. Yeah. And we'll be meeting with them next week as well. They've been some of our greatest contributors, and they have heavy use of Containerd in their cloud in China. That's another data point there.
Yeah, it's an incredible community out there. Like, you know, there's it's a huge country, and when you have so many people, you tend to develop interesting technology solutions to deal with that scale. So I'm just super stoked. Everyone's just sharing information and bettering the open source technology that we all depend on a global scale.
That's great. We can't wait to hear what you're announcing out there.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm just trying to think, it's just been kind of incredible to see the container and cloud native space grow over the last, this marks almost, it's going to be in a few months, 4 years for me at the Linux Foundation, which helped start CNCF and OCI. And before that, I spent about 5 years kind of in infrastructure land at Twitter, where we had our own kind of orchestration technology called Mesos, which is kind of a popular solution. And just crazy to see how fast the industry has changed. And I remember before I took the job to start CNCF, a few weeks before that, I was at a meetup at Apple in Sunnyvale, they're talking about their Mesos usage, which, you know, that as a company, they generally don't share that information much. So I take the job, and 3.5 years later, things turn around and, Apple formally joined the Cloud Native Computing Foundation. They've been contributing to Kubernetes, gRPC, Envoy, Vitess, and other CNCF projects. So it's kind of interesting to see how fast technology changes, overall. I just feel like things are moving faster now. I don't know if that's just me, but like, it seems like the pace of change seems to be moving faster, at least from my perspective for technology.
Well, I agree 100%. I'm sure that Pete does as well. He's got his hands in deeper than I do. But who I feel for is the folks that are listening. A lot of our customers. Yep. I know we were just at Cisco Live, and obviously that's a more networking focused event, but I mean, some people still give you a pretty slack-jawed stare when you mention the word Kubernetes, and that shocks me because we're in it every day. That is how we're spending our time.
It's the bubble. Like
those
like
are the projects. Even at Cisco, we have Kubernetes projects, and that is where we spend our time in my group. That's what we're talking about. So when somebody doesn't know what it is or isn't sure, or they've heard it, but they're not sure exactly what it's for, that I find that shocking.
Yeah, we're still in the early days when it comes to, it is a technology that has been adopted by banks, a lot of leading industries and so on. But now we're kind of what we call like hitting the late majority of adopters, which make up the majority of you know, companies out there. And it's just going to, I think Kubernetes will continue to cement itself in different areas. Like if you remember Linux, Linux kind of started out as a hobbyist thing, you know, kind of became a dominant OS for the servers. Eventually crazy people were like, you know, let's throw Linux in cars and embedded devices and so on. Eventually like started to take over different industries. Kubernetes is going under a similar transformation where people are trying to modify it to like run VMs and containers at the same times using the same control plane. There are people that are trying to get Kubernetes fit in edge devices by slimming things down. So like, I think you'll see a similar pattern over time where different companies and users are going to like, you know, we need to orchestrate something, right? Like, can we potentially get Kubernetes to do that? And we need it to run on a constrained environment. Let's go rip out some pieces and see if it works. And I'm starting to see that evolution happen in the CNCF and Kubernetes community. So I don't know, Phil may have some different thoughts, but it seems people are at it. So.
Yeah, I mean, no, it's a very interesting time where I think I agree with multiple things there. One is that, you know, the pace of change is unbelievable. And that means a lot of work for us, you know, a big vendor, you know, dealing with customers, trying to keep them up to date, you know, give them guidance. But also, you know, I'm in Eastern Europe right now. And, you know, banks here are trying to figure out Kubernetes. We had an Istio meetup last night, packed out, you know, trying to understand all these new technologies and service mesh. So yeah, it's a very exciting time. And I think, you know, IBM sees our customer base as having, you know, kind of the 80-20, about 20% are in this cloud native era. And we see, you know, this huge 80% opportunity of enterprises and companies who still want to move to cloud and understand containers and all these technologies. And so we all have plenty of work to do. I mean, it's definitely an exciting time to see how all this shapes up over the next few years.
Okay, first off, I'm glad to hear that you're in Eastern Europe and that's not your home, because I was thinking, I mean, people can't see the video, but I was thinking that is a weird decorating arrangement that Phil's got going on there. But also,
hotel.
It is very comforting for me, for some reason, to know that, you know, halfway around the world, you know, in Eastern Europe, you can go and there's a meetup and people are standing, you know, it's a packed meetup where people want to learn about Istio. That is so cool. Yep. That is really, really cool and comforting. So thank you guys for joining us today. I really appreciate you taking the time to update us on what's going on with CNCF. We would love to have you back. The door is always, always open, but I know you guys got places to go, people to see and things to do. So thank you very much. We enjoyed it and we hope to talk to you soon.
Cool. Thank you very much.
All right. Bye-bye.